Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Death of Death, where we proclaim Christ's victory over sin, death, and everything else. I'm your host, Nick, and today we're doing something a little different on the show. I hope the air conditioning and the fans aren't blowing you away, because it's a really hot day in Mission Viejo today, and I could not turn them off to record this. I've decided to do a recurring segment here where I recount to you some of the books I've been reading. By no means do I read a lot of books, so giving you the rundown on them is possible and graspable. So I'm going to call these episodes Restaurant of the Mind. That's the name of the bookstore in Dark Tower. So for those of you who are devotees now and in the future, you'll know why it's called that and nobody else will. And that can be your little trivia. Before we get started, I wanted to give our listener Hector a shout out. I gave him a haircut last week and he remarked it was weird to hear my voice in person. So it was great talking to you, Hector. Thanks for coming in. I use Goodreads to keep track of the books that I've read, and this isn't an advertisement for Goodreads, but hey, if you're looking to play some advertising, I'm here for you. I use it for one main reason, and that is that I love the annual book goal feature. So every year you can set a goal and then put in every book you finish, and it keeps track of where you are with your goal. It might tell you you're two books ahead, or it might tell you you're two books behind. It might say you're right on track. Anyways, this year I set a goal for 45 books. A 5-book increase from last year, for those of you keeping track, and I'm about on track with that, but I'll keep the numbers to myself. I'm going to do these episodes about 3 times a year and catch you up with what I've been reading in a 4-month period. I'm going to link to all of these in the show notes, so if you want to buy any of these, use my link, and I'll get a cut at no cost to you. So, going through my Goodreads list, first up is God's Glory and Salvation Through Judgment by James Hamilton. I love biblical theology, and this is one of the key books on that subject. James Hamilton definitely has a thesis. His thesis is clear from the title, that the Bible is made up of stories of God saving his people through judgment. So examples of that could be like the Ark, where God saves his people in the midst of judging the rest of the planet, or in the conquering of the Promised Land, where God is judging the pagan nations and allowing Israel to prevail over them. So the author does a fantastic job of breaking down the Bible book by book in its biblical theological context, and it's always with the lens of salvation through judgment. It reminds me of John Frame's systematic theology, where everything is in the context of the triad. There's like a triangle on every single page of that gigantic systematic theology, because Frame kind of shoehorns everything into a Trinitarian formulation, but it works for that volume, and it works here. It may not be the way that you see biblical theology, but it totally works, and it's one of the best works on the topic. Next up is So This Is Permanence by Ian Curtis. And if you're wondering how I read a book by a man who never wrote one, you'd be valid in your incredulity. Ian Curtis was the frontman of Joy Division, and after his suicide, the band would go on to perform as New Order. I'm a huge fan of Joy Division, and my sister got me this book for Christmas quite a few years ago, and I just never got around to reading it. But long after his death, his widow scanned all of his notebooks into a book. This includes songs that never became Joy Division songs and early versions of songs you may already know, but you can enjoy this book any way you please. But I read the prologue and the introduction, which is briefly biographical of Curtis and talks a little bit about the relationship between him and his wife. Then when I got to the portion of the book with the lyric sheets, I would turn on that song and listen to it as I read along with the lyrics. It enhanced all of the songs I already knew, like Love Will Tear Us Apart, and turned me on to some songs that I wasn't really that familiar with, like Atmosphere. I actually like that song so much that I put it on my wedding playlist for October. So if you like Joy Division or anything Joy Division adjacent, like New Order or Bauhaus, I recommend So This Is Permanence. The next book I read was What Did You Expect by Paul Tripp. My fiance and I read this together, obviously, because we're getting married. It wasn't really premarital, but it was good to get some practical advice for an established marriage. I liked this book a lot because it was presented from the point of view that marriage is a sinner marrying another sinner, and one of the nails it pounded away at over and over, and I found this quite practical, was to keep short accounts with one another. That's a theme that pervades most of the book. So if I were to sum up my largest relational struggles, I'm not sure I would say I keep long accounts with my mate, but it's something that could be at the root of most relational strife. The only reason you snap at them for the irritating way that they click the buttons on the remote control is because there's already something bothering you from before. So keep short accounts, forgive often and graciously. I've enjoyed taking this practical knowledge from the book and applying it to our relationship ahead of our marriage. To supplement that last book, we also read Marriage and the Mystery of the Gospel by Ray Ortlund. This is from a series of books called Short Studies in Biblical Theology. This is the only one I've read so far, but I have most of them, and I'm trying to get through them all. But each book takes a subject and then expounds on it from a biblical theological perspective, all in about 120 pages, which is pretty impressive. But they have one on cities, one on chaos, one on kingdom, etc. So this is the one on marriage, and it's very good. Heaven forbid if this is the longest review that I give, but I read The Lost World by Michael Crichton. This year I decided to just catch up on all Michael Crichton. I've always loved Crichton, but Jurassic Park was my ultimate favorite movie when I was a kid, and it remains so to this day. But I read the book when I was about 14, and even though the gravity of it was definitely lost on me, I really enjoyed it. And over the course of my adolescence, I read a few more of his books. I've always bought his books when I see them, and it had been years since I had actually read any of them. But then when the new Jurassic World movies started coming out, and then Westworld was adapted into an HBO show, it just seemed like there was a renewed interest in Michael Crichton worldwide, and I'm realizing I'm kind of out of touch with the Crichton universe, if you will. I decided this year to just work through all the Michael Crichton books I have that I haven't read yet. So I read this one first. This is the sequel to Jurassic Park. There's a lot of interesting stuff in here. Thing about Michael Crichton is that he was a very brilliant man. Like, he was a medical doctor who quit practicing in order to write fiction. So he'll often and relentlessly have his characters go on a massive rabbit trail explaining something like evolution, for example. And he's really just taking this as an opportunity to teach the reader something. So he does this most often with a character named Ian Malcolm, who's portrayed by Jeff Goldblum in the Jurassic Park movies. He's a much different character in the books, mind you, but he's injured in both of these books. I should also take this opportunity to tell you that the Lost World book is so much better than the movie that it almost ruined it for me. But Ian Malcolm suffers an injury in both books and then spends most of the book on morphine. And Crichton uses this as a storytelling device to have him mindlessly trail off on fun and exciting topics. Here's an example of something he says that I actually disagree with for a few reasons, but it is really interesting nonetheless. This book was published in 1995, so it's right on the cusp of the internet. And Michael Crichton, via Ian Malcolm, has this to say about what he calls cyberspace. Although personally, I think cyberspace means the end of our species. Yes, why is that? Because it means the end of innovation, Malcolm said. This idea that the whole world is wired together is mass death. Every biologist knows that small groups in isolation evolve fastest. You put 1,000 birds on an ocean island and they'll evolve very fast. You put 10,000 on a big continent and their evolution slows down. Now, for our own species, evolution occurs mostly through our behavior. We innovate new behavior to adapt. And everybody on Earth knows that innovation only occurs in small groups. Put 3 people on a committee and they may get something done, 10 people and it gets harder, 30 people and nothing happens, 30 million, it becomes impossible. That's the effect of mass media. It keeps anything from happening. Mass media swamps diversity and makes every place the same. Bangkok or Tokyo or London, there's a McDonald's on one corner, a Benetton on another, a Gap across the street. Regional differences vanish. All differences vanish. In a mass media world, there's less of everything except the top 10 books, records, movies, ideas. People worry about losing species diversity in the rainforest, but what about intellectual diversity, our most necessary resource? That's disappearing faster than trees, but we haven't figured that out. So now we're planning to put 5 billion people together in cyberspace, and it'll freeze the entire species. Everything will stop dead in its tracks. Everyone will think the same thing at the same time. Global uniformity. Now, I think it can be proven that the internet has taken us farther than we ever hoped to go in isolation, but I think his concerns about uniformity and taste and culture were incredibly valid. I've spent more than enough time on this title now, so I should probably move on, but let's all bring back the word cyberspace, please. Don't send me an email or a text message. Send me a cyber message. Moving on. Next up is Fatale, Volume 2 by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. This is a graphic novel recommended to me by Hunter Delaney, shout out. I could best sum it up as a demonic film noir, except that it's a comic book and not a film. But I read the first volume late last year, then got into this one. They're really short trades, so you can read the whole thing in about an hour. There's not much I can say about the plot without spoiling things for you, so I'm going to use this time to defend graphic novels. The days of degrading comics is over, everybody. Graphic novels have risen to such a height that there's no point in looking down on them any longer. I even read a biography of Glenn Gould in graphic novel format. It engages more areas of your brain than regular reading. You could do more with them story-wise, given their visual format. And all that to say, try out some comics in a subject that you already like. If you like monsters and demons and stuff like that, then and you also like film noir, then this is definitely a good one to try out. I think that's all I have to say about that one. Next up is Side Hustle by Chris Guillebeau. I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. I like to read books that are out of my wheelhouse, and this one definitely fits that category. It's about turning a hobby or a small idea into a second stream of income. It wasn't helpful to me in determining what a second stream of income should be, but it had some basic business and marketing stuff in there, which is always interesting. It was a quick, easy read, and if you're into business and things like that, then I recommend it. Next by Michael Crichton. This is the last book to be published before Crichton's death in 2008. It's all about genes and genetics. Again, he uses story to teach you things. So, for example, the story will trail off and he'll debunk a myth about blonde people going extinct because the genes for dark hair are overtaking them, stuff like that. It involved a lot of genetic testing on animals, so there's a sentient parrot and a monkey that can talk, and that may sound silly, but it was actually very entertaining. After Crichton's death in 2008, Stephen King wrote, "He made you believe that cloning dinosaurs wasn't just over the horizon, but possible tomorrow, maybe today." So you don't read next and say, "Talking monkeys, I'm out of here." You never stop wanting to know what happens next. Yeah, you see what I did there. There's also a lot of intertwining stories throughout the whole book, so it's never really dull. There's always something new going on. You're constantly hopping around to different people and different situations. It was just really good. None Greater by Matthew Barrett. It's a very approachable book, but it covers some of the deepest things known to Christian doctrine. If you don't know Matthew Barrett, he's the head editor of Credo Mag and the host of the Credo podcast. When I started reading this book, my fiance exclaimed to me that he used to be one of her professors and at Cal Baptist, and then proudly said something to the extent of "way to go," meaning she's glad that he made it, if you will. The material he covers in this book is known as classical theism. It's a rundown of attributes of God. He spends a few foundational chapters on things like God's essence and infinitude, but starting with chapter 4, it's a rundown of all the words that I can't seem to get a grasp on, no matter how many introductory materials I read. So if you want to read about God's immutability, impassibility, simplicity, and all that good stuff, read this one. The Evolution of Claire by Tess Sharp. I'm going to go on a tangent here because I feel the need to defend myself. You already know that I'm a huge Jurassic Park fan. Jurassic Park fans aren't as fortunate as Star Wars fans, okay? Star Wars fans have 11 movies, 2 TV series, and a list of books you could legitimately spend the rest of your life working through and may never finish them all, or even be able to find them all, and on top of that, comics and video games. What I'm saying is that Star Wars fans have an almost limitless supply of material in their universe. Jurassic Park fans have always been bereft of material, or at least good material. We have the first 2 Michael Crichton books, we have the first 3 movies, some really bad comics throughout the 90s, and that was it. From 2001 until 2015, we didn't get a single movie. There was what looks to be a really cool video game in 2011, but I don't play video games, so I wouldn't know. The wait was worth it, because now we are living in an era where there are 2 Jurassic World movies, which are really good. There's a short film. There's a 3rd movie and 2 series coming in the next few years. My point is that we've always suffered a lack of supply despite the overwhelming demand. So this book, The Evolution of Claire by Tess Sharp, is a tie-in book about Claire Dearing, who is portrayed by Bryce Dallas Howard in the newer films. And for whatever reason, the powers that be decided that this book should be in the style of a young adult novel. So there it is. I read a YA novel about a teenaged girl, and there were parts that were hard to stomach. It was so corny at times that I almost stopped reading it, but there was some good tie-in material, like we finally found out what happened to the dinosaurs on Isla Sorna, stuff like that. I've definitely talked about this long enough, so if you like Jurassic Park enough to explore tie-in material, this is worth your time for the sake of canon. May feel like panning for gold at times, but it's fun. It's not Hemingway, but it's fun. I really hope the Jurassic Park universe churns out some more serious books in the future, because I really believe they would sell well, and we should get more series and stuff too. Universal really only has Jurassic Park and Fast and the Furious, and we all know Fast and the Furious is a joke. They need to start capitalizing on the gold mine that is Jurassic Park, because I alone would support the business. Next up is When the Man Comes Around by Douglas Wilson. This is a commentary on Revelation by the great Douglas Wilson, as I said, and it has the coolest title of any Bible commentary ever written, because it's named after a Johnny Cash song, When the Man Comes Around. This is the first commentary I had ever read on Revelation, and it really demystified it for me, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Revelation is not less mysterious, but the task of deciphering it doesn't seem as difficult anymore. Even if I'm not 100% sure what to believe about the book, I know there's no shortage of plausible theories rooted in solid interpretation and solid theology. Douglas Wilson is a preterist, which means he believes Revelation is about the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. That's my position as well, and he did a very good job of laying it out. So this is a very accessible read if you're if you've never read anything on Revelation before. Delighting in the Trinity by Michael Reeves. This was a really good basic introduction to the Trinity, but I would almost hesitate to say it's about the doctrine of the Trinity. I would say it's Trinity adjacent. He covers things that most books on the Trinity don't, which is pretty cool. He deals with the problem of evil and love and other topics that don't usually come up in Trinity books. The full title of this is actually Delighting in the Trinity, An Introduction to the Christian Faith. He puts basic Christian doctrine into its proper Trinitarian context. So for that reason, it's very good. And it's only like 130, 120 pages, so it's well worth your time for how short it is. Treaty of the Great King, The Covenant Structure of Deuteronomy by Meredith Klein. I like to read Bible commentaries just for fun with no intense extant study. Occasionally, I do like to follow along in my Bible and make notes and stuff, and this is one of those books that I wanted to do that with. It's only 149 pages, but it took me a while to get through it all. It's a little dull at times, and at times very fascinating. Overall, very much worth the read. It's about the covenant structure of the Book of Deuteronomy. So Meredith Klein was an Old Testament scholar, but he also had degrees in Assyriology, which I didn't know was a thing, and Egyptology. So he knew a lot about the ancient world in general. He breaks down how covenants worked in the ancient world and then shows how Deuteronomy follows some of that same pattern and where it breaks the pattern. Because, you know, the covenant does have continuity with secular covenants, but it's also remarkable because it does come from God, so it has continuity and discontinuity. It covers some cool and interesting things like the end of Deuteronomy when Moses is about to die. Spoiler alert, he dies, and he blesses all the tribes of Israel. There are some interesting parallels between those blessings and the ones given by Jacob to his sons at the end of his life, who of course would go on to be the father of each of the 12 tribes of Israel. So some of those blessings kind of overlap in interesting ways. And that's just one example of something cool that I remembered from the book, just to give you a teaser. It just has a lot of great stuff like that, and definitely one you want to take your time with and make some notes in your Bible. All right, that is going to do it for this week. I think this may be the longest episode in history that didn't include a guest. I want to know what you've been reading. There are many places to get in contact with the show. It's a social image up in anticipation of this show asking what you've been reading, so feel free to go over there and comment on your favorite platform. Hope you enjoyed the book recommendations. If you want any of these, use the links in the show notes to buy them on Amazon. If you want to partner with us and support the show, you can go to patreon.com/deathofdeath and become a member of the elect for just $4 a month. I've been your host, Nick, here to tell you that I'm drowning beneath the weight of my unread books, and if you're as committed to proclaiming Christ's victory, I'll be here to do it with you all again next week. Goodbye for now.